Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of Bare Belief. Hello, Jessica.
Hello, Gabriel.
How's it going?
It's going really well.
This is our third take, so if we sound a little loopy, just blame it on that. So how was your holidays, Jessica?
It was a splendid time, calm but energetic, lots of stuff happening, but it was a good time.
Well, good to hear it. It's definitely the first time I'm hearing that today. I got back from my holidays on Tuesday. I had a lovely, lovely trip in the Caribbean. It just made me realize how much I hate winter and the cold and the snow and the crap that's outside my window right now.
You're growing into a snowbird.
I'm growing into a snowbird. And I don't know if it's age or what it is, but I feel every winter I just hate it more and more. And like living in Montreal, it just makes me question everything, all my life decisions. Come springtime, I forget how horrible the winter is here. And then I'm happy and I'm like, oh, this city rules. And then in the fall, I'm like, wow, look at all the pretty colors. And then you go camping and it's lovely. And then, November comes along.
And winter.
And I'm just miserable. And then I'm like, why am I still here? So, yeah. But whatever, that's a problem for future Gabriel that we'll probably complain about again next year in January. So other than that, I would like to do a shout out to my sister, Carolyn, who's been listening religiously to the podcast and who's been submitting a lot of nice comments. And I just want to say, for all of you out there who have been supporting us for the past couple months, we really appreciate you. Don't hesitate to leave us comments or to subscribe. The number one thing you can do to help us out is subscribe. And tell your friends, you know, like that old Head and Shoulders commercials. If you tell two friends and they tell two friends and so on, the next thing you know, we'll take over the world. And I don't know what will happen once that happens, but hey, why not? Jessica.
Sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring. Jessica looks a little freaked out. I think she didn't realize that I had like dreams of world domination in podcasting. So that being said, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Caroline. And thank you to all of our listeners. Don't forget to subscribe if you can. Comment also. Comments are great. You can do that on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasting. Actually, if you submit a review on Apple Podcasts, that helps a lot with the algorithm. And you can also write us, barebeliefpodcast@gmail.com, and we will be happy to hear from you. Whether you think we stink or you think we're great, we will take them both. Criticism is also good because we realize that we're just starting, and any way we can improve, we will be happy to hear it. So today we have something interesting in terms of topic. So what are we talking about today, Jessica?
We are going to be talking about spiritually healthy relationships, both sort of on a personal level and within community.
So that means to me that if we have healthy relationships, probably stems from the idea that somewhere out there, there are unhealthy spiritual relationships. And I can think of a few over time that I've heard and seen.
Yeah, and sort of being a leader within a spiritual community, it's really hard, and it hurts me to hear these stories, or again, the stereotype of churches being judgmental, hypocritical, all these sort of negative ideas and even critiques of the church, because there are very healthy spiritual communities. And this isn't just within the Christian community. Like it's within all faith-based groups. And
oh, absolutely. I don't think that matters. I dated a Muslim guy for a while, and there's a lot of similarities in how that negative relationship aspect of some of these things that can develop, like they're the same. Like it ends up doesn't matter. I think that it affects people the same way, and it's just a different kind of flavor, if we can.
It is. And I think being a spiritual community, we are allowed access to more vulnerable situations in a person's life. So we need to be held as leaders, holding ourselves more accountable to ensure that we're not infringing on boundaries and the messages that we're putting out there and the leadership we're providing. But at the same time, I've had parishioners using power and clout to manipulate me as well.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. So There's many a time a member will be like, if you don't do this, I'm leaving the church and taking my money with you or with me. I mean, I had.
Well, and why are they there? Like,
well, exactly. Like, what's the purpose? So I think one is people are looking for community, a place to go, a safe place to be, a familiarity. But we need to remember that none of these organizations belong to us. They're cooperatives, right? We're all working together to sustain some form of ministry, of learning and growing and developing those relationships with the Holy Other. So building community together as well as serving our own needs. But in the end, it's for a bigger purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So as we're growing and developing within the Christian circle, we've talked about this. It's not about just holding it. It's about putting it out there as well.
So I agree with everything you're saying. But like what I think we see a lot in practice is the opposite. Like it just feels like there's so much of this right now. There's a lot of gatekeeping, I think, in some religious circles, especially in some of the more conservative churches. Where, you know, we've talked about this, where it's like it's almost like that Christian measuring stick. Like, are you Christian enough for my thing? Or can you be my friend? Or can you even be in my community? Like, we're going to measure your Christianity according to this arbitrary measuring stick that we've thought of. And then you can or can't be in our group.
Exactly. And I find that really hard, especially like even yesterday, I heard a story when I was at a funeral about a woman. She was a single mom, first baby, went to have, it was a daughter, baptized, and the priest turned her away saying, no, I'm sorry, you're not married, you know? And so you're like, wait a minute, this is not about sharing the love of God.
So can I just, like, as an atheist who knows a bit about the Bible, like, isn't the whole point of, like, if you think back to what the teachings of Jesus were, is like, the number one thing he said was like, bring me the children. Like how many times, like there's a couple times in the Bible where he clearly states like, no, let these children come to me. So who the hell are these like ministers or priests or whatever that you refuse the entrance of a child into your community? To me, that sounds bonkers. Like it's.
It is. And so again, what is the purpose of faith-based groups? You know, and it's about growing that positiveness. Positivity within the world is about growing love and support. I had a really cool conversation because I was sharing with a mutual friend of ours about Advent and how we were talking about the rapture and the second coming. And she had pointed out, well, actually, there's a lot happening in society, sort of the breakdown of capitalism. Like, what are more, you know, sustainable measures of food security and how do we get it more equitable? Versus the hierarchical, and it's sort of kind of happening naturally, right? And I think that's the role of these faith-based groups is not to be that sort of leader in that, but if we are about love and growing love and giving a place for people to heal, then yeah, you know, that's going to help foster that new world order in some sort of sense, you know, like we talked about it, it's liberation theology. If the body of Christ, the people who are in the church are doing those things that Christ taught, then the world is a totally different place. Righteousness isn't about like the ethical standard. It's about self-justice.
But when I hear of people talking about righteousness, especially the evangelicals and kind of like the, I like to call him the crazy Southern American, the Southern Baptist and all these, I feel like they use righteousness as a way of self-aggrandizing themselves and making like it's like being righteous is like
being righteous is about being right, not about
but not just right. It feels to me like it's that Christian measuring stick again, where it's like, look at how good a Christian I am, and that's how I'm being righteous by like doing all these things. I think I like your approach to righteousness. I've never heard it explained that way to me. And to me, that's more in line with what I think it should be. Like if you're going to be righteous, like it's
advocacy. Yeah. You know, it's about, you know, holding, you know, place for those who don't have that power. Jesus didn't come to build up this whole institution. He came to destroy it. Well, I don't want to say that, but he came to change it.
Well, he kind of did.
Like, well, he said he was going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, right? Like that was that whole metaphor.
There's a lot of examples in the Bible of like how he kind of bucks all these trends and like really, like lack of a better word, pisses off all of the authorities. And like that's why they crucified him. Like he
exactly.
he's was kind of. And it's interesting because if we draw parallels to like what's happening right now, especially south of the 49th parallel, you can kind of see the same thing where like these Christians are like in quotes Christians. I see a parallel in how Jesus was treated in the Bible as to how they're treating immigrants and minorities and all of, and it's like, and if you do or you know, even a loose interpretation of what's the what's written in especially the New Testament, like I find like it's hypocritical, and that's where like I think it ties into our this like spiritual abuse where all of these organizations are using the spiritual excuse to be this way, and that's it's very concerning for me. I find it very.
But I think that goes back to the whole health of the organization or the community as well, because I have also had people trying to manipulate my leadership based on their power or their persuasions, right? Some of it is money. Like, if you don't do as I ask, I'm going to leave and I'm going to take my membership and my money with me. If you don't do this, then I'm going to do that. You know, I had my job threatened. I was planning a mission trip to the Seychelles Islands, which my bishop told me to, but somebody was like, if you don't stop this right now, I'm going to get you fired. I'm like, but the bishop told me to do this, so I don't know how you're going to do that. But okay, but again, it's this. So I think it's the self-righteousness, right? Like when spirituality and spiritual areas are used for personal, not gratification, give me a word, gain, thank you, then that's where we are getting into a very dangerous zone. And I think it can happen with parishioners. I think it can happen with leadership. And I think those in leadership who are doing it really need to be like, is this the right place for me? And you see it all the time. And I'm so tired of like the priest, you know, being a pedophile joke because we're not all like that. And it's these people before me or even now. Like I had a friend who frequent a local establishment. And ended up having a wonderful night with a gentleman who was a Catholic priest.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
But everybody knew he was this Catholic priest. And I was like, wait a minute, you've taken vows. You are holding a standard. And I'm not saying you have to be perfect, but you're representing something that we are going to be critiqued for. But now this is really on the other end. So, and I told him off one night. He's like, you're not very nice to me. And I'm like, you make my job so hard and I'm done with it. Because I'm trying to like help people and build a safe place. And all your behavior does is just continue that stereotype. So maybe we need to get into sort of a definition of what spiritual abuse is, because we can go on with stories all the time, right? And there's so many.
It took us 2 hours to start recording because we couldn't stop talking.
Right? So, and the really cool thing is that many of our dioceses across Canada are now reviewing.
And when you're talking about many of our dioceses, here we're specifically talking
the Anglican Church. And so way back when I was a youth coordinator, I was the chair for the first Safer Church policy. And
what's a Safer Church?
So Safer Church is again, making sure like there's no physical abuse, emotional abuse, vexatious behavior, harassment. And so
protecting
the church. So when we started, it was sort of the basics of physical, mental, financial harassment, and obviously like the sexual abuse and all of that. But now in this review, we have way more categories for a safe environment. And the definition that they presented in this new document is pattern of coercion or domineering behavior. Using religion, usually by a person who holds power and trust. Many acts of abuse in a religious environment will have a spiritual dimension. Examples include using a religious ideology, perception, tradition, or sacred text to abuse power, compelling a person to engage in religious acts against his, her, or their will, abuse that occurs in a religious context or by a religious leader, invoking of divine authority to manipulate a person into meeting their needs of the abuser, using spirituality or spiritual authority to dismiss a person's perspective, agency, or value, attempts to use the divine, sacred texts, sacred traditions, theology, or spirituality to put their leadership or decisions beyond questioning or accountability, attempts to spiritualize or justify harm using the divine, sacred text, sacred tradition, theology, or spirituality.
See, to me, that just sounds like toxic behaviors that happen in relationships, but the only difference here is that it's used with a spiritual twang or spiritual flavor.
Well, it's what are those tools that I can use to do that, right? So one example that another one is about sort of financial manipulation, right? Like, you're helping to build the kingdom of God. We need more of your money. And, oh, but I don't have enough to pay. Well, you're not being, again, this Christian measuring stick.
There are some religions where that's like you have to contribute. Like, I think it's the Jehovah's Witnesses where you have to pay, it's like 10% of your...
Yeah, I mean, that's the spiritual practice of tithing.
Yeah.
Is again, to sort of put some of your finances into, you know, the spiritual community or that... I mean, now others can think of it as what's my charitable givings, you know? Yeah. So again, and then people sort of go, what's enough? What's not enough? So people sort of...
I have a very interesting perspective on I had an experience, it was about a year ago, no, 2 years ago, where over the holidays I went to visit the Vatican. And the Catholics, you know, they have these vows of poverty, all of their clergy need to kind of partake in all that stuff. And the Vatican is no exception. Like all those people who are in there, those priests and bishops and whatever, the heck, those little funny hat wearing people, they all take that vow of poverty. Now, I've traveled all over the world and I've rarely seen opulence and decadence the way I saw it in the Vatican. And that whole tithing thing that like the Catholics need to do and how you're supposed to give money, it is kind of gross to see the treasures that especially the museum and like the even in the basilica, like the stuff that's in there is just wild, like the amount of gold and art and statues and like priceless things that they've collected from around the world. So I find that question of like giving to these religious organizations, like how can you be asking people to be like giving their own money while you have a bunch of guys sitting in Rome, like literally in a palace? And so I find that to me, that's like kind of a toxic
image,
but also a form of abuse in a way, because you're like taking these people who are like, there's people from all over the world who are in like these poor ass countries who are like giving their money and giving and like who could be putting that money towards something else.
Right. And we have to sort of be aware that within assessments, they're called assessments. So parishioners give, churches usually have an assessment from their regional, so a diocese in the Anglican Church. And then the diocese has an assessment to the national church. And because there are bills to be paid amongst the different hierarchical structures, so to have resources. So I hear what you're saying. But then, like I know within the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church, there are... Like in the Anglican Church, the organization is now called Alongside Hope. It used to be called PWRDF, so Primus World Relief and Development Fund. And they've done stuff all over the world. They help in crisis situations. They've been building a lot of rapport and reconciliation among the indigenous community. So that work is exactly like, hey, putting it back. And a huge portion goes into that, as well as their own sort of fundraising and whatnot. When we sort of look at the treasures around us, it's sort of like, what's the point? I mean, even the church sizes that we have, right? The big cathedrals, the Gothic structures, is all a symbol towards worshiping God. Like, you know, and that's a whole other podcast. Do we need all that? Is that really the right acclamation of praise? You know, but, or no, we have to get the silver things, you know, not just the wood or clay cups and patens or the plates. So what does it all mean? And where it's an interesting transition now. So again, a lot of it is around sort of that money or power or, you know, relation that way. And like in merging communities, right? Like we have one now that has, you know, one community is the building, the other community brought finances with them. So who's in charge? And they're learning to navigate Like, who has final say in that? And in the end, it's like, no, we got to come up. It's like a blended family, right? Is the mom going to say where the money goes, or the dad, because you're moving into the dad's house? Who knows? But again, it's this, it's the manipulation, right? And control. That's where we need to be aware. So again, I had a colleague, and we were sort of kind of talking about power during our, it's called the Clericus. So when all the priests get together, and I love how he dealt with conflicts, because I was having an issue, and he's like, you know what, you need just humble yourself and just, but be aware. And I'm like, humble myself? Because we hear humility as sort of like lesser than, like making yourself lesser than the other. But it wasn't. And I think for what I'm understanding now with him, when we're humbling ourselves, we're just taking a step back, being calm, let it play out a little bit, but let's go rationally. And then he encourages, what is our purpose and intent? If our purpose and intent is about God and about growing the relationships and the love of God, then we're going to have a different decision than making my church the biggest, you know, bestest, most lucrative, most people. So I think that's the reflection that the church is in now. What is our purpose in this situation? We are no longer the popular kids. We don't have the ultimate power in things in some areas, because we do see it. You've given examples. But again, rebuilding, reconciling our relationship and looking at our institutions. So to actually, once again, reflect what was Jesus's teachings, not just he is the savior and you have to do this to get into heaven. That was never the message. As I've mentioned, he said, the kingdom of heaven is upon you now. And we can do that by ensuring that everybody has what they need. And again, not abusing, not taking advantage, but how do we make it so that everybody has that? So
I think this is where we're going to have very different perspectives.
Okay.
Where if somebody were to come to me and explain to me that they are in a religious organization or church or group or whatever, where they're experiencing spiritual kind of abuse or that toxicity, my advice to them would be, get the hell out.
Yeah.
Like I would be like, throw all that crap to the side. This is, you're being abused. You're probably being manipulated. You're probably being, to a certain degree, traumatized, because I know for a fact
there is trauma.
There is trauma involved. But and so my approach would be to just like, as an atheist, my reflex would be like, this is all crap anyway. Like, why are you letting yourself being carried away? So what would be your perspective or your advice to somebody that who'd come to you? Because I think you'd have a similar reaction, but a more spiritually perhaps.
And I think that's where this sort of stereotype of the reverend for the reverend. So say it's that type of leadership is, and we've had that. We have a history of kind of sweeping things under the carpet or settling, quote unquote, settling out of court or all these other ways, but the situation has never been handled. Well, I think the church is now in a position where that's no longer acceptable. People need to be terminated. People need to be managed accordingly, right? So it's like, and how do you do that? And if it's not with, you know, and sometimes it's hard because in this, it's not hard. It's very clear, but you know, what's the organizational culture? And then like, I mean, in some companies that happens too, and you have your HR, you know, and it's okay, you're terminated or you're suspended or whatnot. And I think in, you know, big companies, it's sometimes clearer. Like it seems the policies are right. But I think this happens across.
In practice, it's usually a little more nuanced. Because
right.
There's, you have to protect your career. You have to protect your own self-interest. And if you're being, and it's probably the same in religion. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's still that.
If you're in a church and you're part of a community, there are aspects of that community that you like. That's why you're there. That's why you continue to go every Sunday or like, and being put up. Or like, you know, the activity on Monday night at the church basement or like whatever the heck is going on. There's a reason why you go. You're getting something out of it. So the spiritual abuse is probably in the same light as a corporate, like toxic relationship with your boss. Like you are risking a whole community, and in you could be risking your livelihood. You could be risking, you know, you might have a family that depends on some of this stuff that you're getting
Right. But then I think depending on the, like, again, the severity of what is was in with the law, if you do not see, if you do not feel, then yeah, go to the law, you know, because sometimes we need to really push.
That's interesting. I don't think there's a lot of people in your position who would give that advice.
If the system is unhealthy and not addressing it, then there, I mean, maybe it's idealistic, right? In the sense of there are checks and balances to ensure that it is, right? So if you've experienced, let's say, physical abuse or sexual abuse, and, you know, you're from whomever in your church, and you've gone to your priest, or you've gone to the bishop, or you've gone to whatever, and you're not getting the support you need or the reaction, I don't want to say reaction, but the response.
The response,
yeah. The response that you need, then you know what?
Take the next steps.
Take the next steps. Because we are just like everybody else that needs to be held accountable.
But I think a lot of spiritual, like, that's a clear kind of cut and dry, I'm being hurt physically in some way.
Exactly.
But then there are other ways, I think, that are more subtle.
Right.
And I feel like that's where the nuance is, you know, like some of, like, maybe you're being manipulated, or maybe you're
Well, exactly. And that comes in those statements like you have to do it to help grow the kingdom of God, or the phrase I loved when I was a kid when this happened. And it was just like, you know, like I had said to a camp counselor, and okay, I was 17 at the time. So, I mean, still a child, but I had some street savvy or what I thought. And I was like, yeah, I kind of feel more myself in this group. And it's so nice to kind of have this peace at this camp and whatnot. Like, this is kind of the way the world should be. And this animator had said, no, we see your potential. And if you can just see you as God sees you and how we see you.
Oh, that feels a little manipulative.
Right? And I kind of went, well, why would God tell you
and not me?
And not fax me.
Yeah.
And now
why was I CC'd on this email?
Like, hello. And, you know, yes, we have our learnings and there's mentorships in that. And I think in everybody we can see potential. But it kind of felt like if I don't do it as they do it.
And again,
then I'm not going to get that look.
There's something I think you're hitting on something interesting, because I feel like there's a lot of times where I've heard very similar kind of phrasing and wording in an attempt to manipulate people in that way. And those are the things, like, I'm very attuned to that kind of stuff. It's just how my brain works. And so as somebody who's coming in from the outside, like, if you're trying to get me to get into your belief system or your spirituality or your community, like, that is going to throw me further away, because I can smell manipulation like a mile away.
Wait, but a lot of people that do sort of come back to church are in a vulnerable spot and being like, I don't kind of know where else, but I think I need this or whatnot. And so they're primed to be a victim, you know, or when you finally do feel seen and empowered, well, then you kind of are around a leadership's finger, you know, and then they do that. So again, I think we have to listen to our guts. And when it doesn't seem right or you don't have a clear answer, like, healthy leadership, lay or cleric, clergy, is it's transparent. You know, like, it's not roundabout answers. It's not like there's no clique forming, right? Like, you sort of see that power group that no matter what the, say it's a priest, you know, or whatever that person says, they can say no wrong. And it's, well, no, it's them, or you can't, or da, 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 da. Like, again, where, for me, us, like, we're not always going to agree, and that's fine. But can we have a healthy place where we can have disagreement or conflict? Because conflict is about change and you know.
Conflict's not always.
It's not bad.
Conflict can be a source of growth,
well,
a lot of times.
Part of discerning.
Absolutely.
Right? And it's like, you see it one way, I see it another, and then, okay, let's figure that out. But yeah, or you know, and then there's times where we don't feel heard, but is it safe to keep coming back and we're not being siloed out?
Right.
Right. And it's not about sort of isolation and whatnot. So yes, decisions are going to be made, and we may not get our decision, our answer that we want, but let's be reflective of that. You know, it's like, well, I used to, you know, I've had people sort of, well, I used to have this, but then they voted that, and then they've done this, and but now I'm like on my own, and it's like, okay, so let's again reconcile that, you know, and mediate these situations. And I know as leadership, that can be a little daunting. Somebody's like, oh my gosh, how many more of these do I have to do? But if we're about living in community, then yeah. And I think like I will shout her out, Reverend Canon Joy Sanchez, you know, take those problems when they're small and let's figure that out. Or how do we mitigate that ahead of time to then move forward?
You know, you mentioned her, and I've got to say, when I met Canon Sanchez quite a while ago now, and I met her at a point in time where I had a severe rejection of anything spiritual. And she is probably the one that got me to like open up to the world and start seeing things differently because of her openness and the fact just how she is as a person, and kind of recognize the spiritual trauma that I had had. And she's just a wonderful person. And I think we need more of that type of openness to combat that spiritual abuse and that whole.
Exactly. And there are communities.
Amazing, amazing woman.
And there are communities doing that. But like, don't settle. Like, try different churches, try different groups, you know, where you see that healthy, you know, then dust off your sandals.
But I feel like that's a form of spiritual abuse.
Yeah.
Because I've seen so many times religious leaders talk about how, like, this, like, you have to take on, like, all of this self-sacrifice and suffering. And if you're not suffering, you're not doing it right. And I'm like,
no.
Why? We are on this earth for like what, a maximum, if you're lucky, like 90 years, if you're really, really lucky. And you mean I have to sit there and suffer in the name of like what exactly?
And where does that loyalty is challenged, right?
Exactly. Again, it's that Christian measuring stick. Yeah. Like, how much have you suffered today? And I feel like, and to me, as like someone who's looking at it from the outside, it's like, no, I'm not doing that. Like,
that's and that's
nuts.
Like, the sacrifice has been made. Like, if you're going to look on a theological perspective, Jesus' death, or Christian perspective, Jesus' death was that act of sacrifice. Now we're in a place of grace. All we have to do is accept it and kind of conduct ourselves with love, peace, joy, hope. And that are all subcategories of integrity.
Oh, wow. I like that.
Right? So again, where's the integrity in this moment? And I think that's another way we can keep sort of that accountable. Like, are we being held, like, not just to account, but is there integrity in this? Am I feeling manipulated? Am I feeling, you know, and it always is. And we're not encouraged to listen to that instinct, right? This doesn't feel right. You know, no, it's okay. Don't worry about it. No, if it doesn't feel right, there's something wrong.
I think we should all listen to that little voice inside of us.
Exactly.
So have we done it?
I think we have.
I think we've done it. All right. So again, everybody, thank you. Have you been a victim of spiritual abuse? Do you have any comments, or are we completely wrong? Do you think we're nuts? Please let us know. We'd love to hear you at barebelievepodcast@gmail.com, barebelieve.ca. If you want to check out our website, all of our episodes are there. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and comment on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Just search for Bear Belief. We will come your search results happily. So thank you, Jessica.
Thank you, Gabriel.
Talk to you guys again in 2 weeks.